Welcome to PR After Hours, your twice weekly cocktail of business, PR, and marketing tips hosted by me, Alex Greenwood. Every week, we bring you virtual happy hours featuring business advice from entrepreneurs and leading thinkers in PR, marketing, and business. We're going to get started in just a moment, so stick with us.
Hi, this is Angelo Ponzi, the host of the Business Growth Cafe podcast, and you're listening to PR After Hours.
You know, we get a wide range of people on PR After Hours. We welcome them into the virtual lounge, and we talk to a lot of people about how they got from A to B or A to Z. But the real thing is about how some people, through their own path, create an incredible brand. And that's why I'm very excited to speak with Lane Gawaka today. He owns 4,500 plus rental units. He's the leader of a huge organization, which has acquired over $600 million of real estate by syndicating more than $70 million of private equity since 2016. Okay, that's all Greek to me. I'm just a poor, humble PR agency owner. But one thing I do recognize is somebody who has a great brand. And I'm going to meet Lane today, and we're going to talk to him about how he did it, what he thinks about it, and what you might do as far as learnings to apply to your own brand. Lane, welcome to the virtual lounge.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Alex. Aloha, everybody.
Yeah, and aloha. And he's rubbing it in. He is in Hawaii. You are in Hawaii, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, good times. Is it a bad day there? Is there like one cloud in the sky or maybe two?
There's a few today, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But the wind's kind of moving around, so at least you don't get stagnant, you know?
Well, just try to get through it, sir. Try to get through it. Lane, I would love to hear just a little bit, share with the listeners your story. You've got a great story.
Yeah, so I kind of grew up on this linear path. My parents taught me to go to school, study hard, be really frugal with my money. And then I just started working as an engineer. I don't know why I became an engineer, maybe because I was good at math and science when I was like 8 or 9, God knows, right? Or maybe I Googled it when I was a teenager, the highest paid salaries without having to go to getting a doctor's or master's degree.
Right.
But I started working, right? And as a construction engineer, traveling all the world for work, was never home. And I just kind of kept following all this financial dogma that, you know, today we kind of fight back against, like buying your house to live in, investing in the 401k. I bought a house to live in, was never home. So I started to rent it out, kind of like Turtle style. And that was where, you know, as a young 20-year-old kid, I got this taste of cash flow. And I was like, shoot, if I just did this handful of times, I'll be able to quit my job that I don't like. So that was what I did from 2009 to 2015. Started to buy in more secondary and tertiary markets because that's where the cash flow is. So sophisticated investors don't invest in places like California, Hawaii, Seattle, New York, Boston, because they don't have the rent to value ratios of those types of markets to be able to cash flow. Properties are just too expensive is one thing, but more importantly, you don't fetch as much rents per the price that you pay. Like we're looking for something that's 1% where you take the month the rents divided by the purchase price or higher for it to make sense on paper. So a lot of the places are like Birmingham, Atlanta, Indianapolis, Kansas City, Memphis, Little Rock, a lot of the boring flyover areas that you would probably never go to, but they make for great rentals.
You mean like Kansas City where I live? Yes, I understand completely.
Yeah, although Kansas City is kind of getting a big time out there. You know?
Nice save. You know,
some of the other...
Nice save, yeah. Lane. Nice
save. You know what I'm talking about. I mean, Kansas City actually is, in all seriousness, is kind of becoming a little bit more of a hotter market where it made sense maybe 5 years ago, but maybe not as much today. I mean, everything's on fire in residential world today.
Yeah. Oh, tell me about it. Yeah.
Very different investors, right? Like instead of buying for appreciation, I consider that gambling. We buy off monthly cash flow, right? So in good times, bad times, especially, we're good.
Yeah. Speaking of gambling, you're not a big fan of the stock market and 401ks and stuff at all, are you?
Yeah. I mean, I realized very early on when I did the math, you know, I was making 20-30% returns on my money and, you know, not that great rentals. And I wasn't doing any rehab or any of those types of rehab flipping stuff. We just buy and hold. People don't believe me. They can go to my website, simplepassivecashflow.com/returns. And I do this little whiteboard exercise. 20-30% plus.
Right.
And I'm like, well, why the hell would I want to put my money in this like 401k retirement mutual fund garbage? And then I just, then I start to realize the sham that this all was, where we're all kind of brainwashed to put our money in this type of stuff, where we're stuck in like this cafeteria crappy options where there's high fees, high hidden fees, and just bad returns. I mean, how else do they have all these high executive salaries and big buildings?
Right.
And this is, I mean, this is how most people that work with me are able to get financially free in 5 to 10 years, that already make a good salary, but put their money in the right place, but more importantly, for tax reasons too. And yeah, it's pretty simple, right? Simple passive cash flow is the URL. That's why I made it that way. It's just as long as you don't get bogged down with all this like bad financial advice out there.
Right. Well, let me ask you about this. You're talking about passive investing for working professionals, and we were chatting offline. That's mostly who listens to the show. We got working pros who listen to the show. Not all of them own their own business. Some of them work for some larger corporations and do PR and marketing, that kind of thing. So let's talk to them. Let's talk directly to them, Lane. What is it? What the question I would give you is, okay, let's say I invest in a lot of these turnkey rentals, those kinds of things you're talking about in these really boring flyover states. If I did that, do I have to manage it, or do you hire a management company to deal with that? You said you don't flip them, you don't put a lot of money into them, but do you actually have to be the guy dealing with the people who live there and all the local municipalities and dealing with the taxes and that stuff?
Heck no. I mean, you're a passive investor. Your highest and best use is doing something else.
Right.
But as you become more of a, you know, around 2016, when my net worth got a little higher, I mean, I started investing in syndications and private placements as a passive investor. And now the asset management is completely out of your, you know, you even touch that. You have partners doing all that dirty work for you, managing the manager, finding better deals for you. So that was kind of where the transition happened for me. I started to join different masterminds, got around higher net worth investors, and they're all ditching their little rental properties, which are cool. But to a certain point, they're just not scalable.
Right.
And that's where, you know, I met more accredited investors investing in private placements and syndications.
You know, is there a typical person that you work with on this kind of thing who join up with you? Are these people who are committed to extreme amounts of wealth? Or do you have people who are like, look, man, I just want a good side amount of income coming in that I can count on when I get tired of working for the man? Or is there a certain personality that works with you?
It's a journey. I mean, the people who have those crazy ideas, they're typically the broke guys that don't have any money. The people that I work with are very realistic. They're high paid, you know, W-2 salary guys or business entrepreneurs that are already successful, as opposed to, you know, we all see those entrepreneurs out there. I mean, the first thing is quit your day job, right?
Yeah.
I mean, whether that's $5,000 to $10,000 passive income, the next stage is to get up to $20,000 a month passive income. And then the next stage is like really getting your net worth to $4 or $5 million net worth. That's kind of the stage most people want to attain, because at that point they can pass off their wealth to a couple heirs to kind of mess it up and they'll be okay. That's kind of the kind of the journey. And you know, some people will kind of take it to 8 figures and above because they have some kind of philanthropy or some kind of impact they want to make. And you know, money is a multiplier of a lot of this stuff, right? It makes you. You're already the same person, just makes it bigger, the impact. But yeah, I mean, the whole thing is to get to a point where you can take the mask, you have your own oxygen mask on, you're self-sufficient, your money's working harder for you, and you stop working.
Right, exactly. Because that's the dream that all the financial planners try to give you, though, right? They put that, you know, just put all your money into this for the next 30 years. When you retire, it will be working for you. But your objection to that is that it's gambling, right? I mean, there's no law in the world that says we can't have a crash. Is that kind of what you're getting to?
Yeah, I mean, financial planners are a bunch of crooks, right? Like, they're just commission-based sales guys to put you in whatever product that makes them the best commission. They're not financial. They don't know, right? Like, one of the biggest financial advice that's given to me is you only take financial advice from people who have been financially free. People, and these are, if you're not an accredited investor and you don't have people like this around you, I never had it. My parents were never not accredited. I don't have friends and family that are accredited. It's hard to find these types of people, but it's very simple. I mean, we talk about this stuff all the time on my podcast. What are the wealthy really doing? One of the things that they're doing is, you know, as you mentioned, the normal financial like dogmas is to throw your money into this retirement fund and this accumulation theory,
right?
Build $1 to $3 million, you know, net in there, and then live off the end. But, you know, at the end, you want cash flow. You got to convert it to cash flow. So what I say is, like, why not begin with the end in mind, create cash flow streams today. And the nice thing while you're working now today, you don't need to eat off those cash flow streams. So you have those cash flow streams make income for you and create more income streams. So how does that look? Well, in the beginning, when your net worth is low, you're just buying little rental properties. And maybe your own, most of my guys are able to save $30,000 to $50,000 a year.
Yeah.
So maybe that means buying a rental property every year. And then after a little while, you're buying two every year. And then you're going into a syndication or two every year once your net worth gets a little bit higher. But you see what's happening is just kind of growing and growing and growing and growing. And all the while, you're able to create cash flow so you quit your job today. I mean, very opposite what we're all taught, right? Just put your money in here while we steal all your money in hidden fees and carried interest, right? Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain, right?
Well, this is how you went from being a ramen eating cheapo, which I love that line, by the way, on your website, to where you are now. I'm curious to ask you this kind of off topic a little bit, but what does your family think of you now? I mean, they wanted you to be an engineer. And when you quit being an engineer and all those things, how do they feel about you now?
I mean, they don't know what I do. They think I'm like a real estate agent or something. They're probably a little bit ashamed of me because they spent all this money to go to college and be an engineer. But whatever, you know, that's just my personal situation, right?
Okay,
but,
sure. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, it's a lot of people that work with me. I mean, most people are high paid professionals, right? Went to dozen plus years of higher education.
Right.
And it is a bit of like identity crisis. Cause a lot of us, you know, when you introduce yourself, hi, my name is Lane. I'm an engineer, I'm an accountant, and I'm a doctor. But when you start to invest this way, which is very prudent, I think investing off of cash flow, which performs really well or better in a recession, you know, you get free of your job, right? And a lot of people associate their wealth or their worth to their occupation.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird for me for a little while, but you know, now I have no problem. I mean, I put together deals for other people, bring in passive investors. So this is my kind of full-time job, but for most of my clients, they just want to not have a day job to go to. And, you know, I mean, it's funny, like East Coast, people on the East Coast say, well, what do you do, right? What do you do for work? Mm-hmm. But people on the West Coast, you know, what do you do for life, right? That's kind of the...
Right. Yeah, I find it very strange myself. I'm kind of at the stage in my life where I've done a lot of things, had a lot of nice titles, that kind of thing. I've been in business for myself for almost a dozen years. And I find a lot of that stuff, that kind of being married to a title and what you do, very tedious, frankly, because it doesn't tell you much about who they are as human beings. But so people are so wedded to their occupation because, as you said earlier, they are trying to get to it's a means to an end. But you're saying, look, you don't even have to screw with all that if your whole life, if you get involved in what I do and do it right. So I get that. Well, let's talk from a branding angle though. You've got kind of a, if you don't mind me saying so, I think you'll understand what I mean by this. You've got kind of a rebel thing going here a little bit, don't you? I mean, you're like, look, I'm not, it's one thing to say I'm not like everybody else, but that you really do walk the walk, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, we are like, I have to be what we attract, right? Like, we're not getting into like mainstream retail products here. We're going off the beaten path a little bit into alternative investing, which is actually what the wealthy invest in most. But you know, this is for most people who are taught to buy a house to live in, pay it all down, have no debt, right? This is very off the beaten path. So look, I mean, the numbers tell you what to do. The numbers, like taxes, I mean, everything says to kind of go down this simple passive cash flow path. To me, it's the best risk-adjusted return you can get out there. But most people are just kind of, they can't get past the smokescreen of the mainstream financial dogma.
Right.
So the people who, like, I, at this point, I mean, I've have over 600, 700 investors who have invested more than $50,000 with me, more than 75 people in my mastermind. But that's just a drop of people out there, right? So I can market myself two ways. I go after the people with a little bit of that rebel mentality, or what I call it is my question activity, right? I asked a lot of questions, like, why the hell would we want to like put our money in the 401k and do it that way? Why do we want to buy our house to live in? That makes no sense to me when I compare it with the alternative. You know, the people that are in my trap, they ask a lot of questions, right? They're thinkers or ponderers. They think they're the red pill people, right? For me to kind of market to the blue pill people, just, I mean, yeah, there's a big majority of the people there, but I don't know, it's more fun. I don't know. I have a lot of fun with the people that kind of come through our doors.
Right.
They're like, yeah, I was telling my wife all the time, right? Buying a house to live in didn't make any sense. And nobody listened to me. Everybody was talking about their Social Security, Roth IRA nonsense, right?
You know, it's so funny. I've laughed a few times when you've just said about these sacred cows, like Roth IRA. The next word out of your mouth is nonsense. Or I think you have stronger language you'd rather use. But like, so we're talking to Red Bull people. Well, they might drink Red Bull actually, but you're talking to these Red.
Yeah, they probably do, but they read all the nonsense on it and they know it's not healthy for them, right? We're at least educated about this stuff.
Hey, I finally got to the age where I can't drink Red Bull or Red Bull and vodka as I used to. But my point being, when you're a red pill person, when you're trying to reach them with your brand, curious as to how do you find them? You know what I'm saying? They can't all just find you, right? How do you reach out to them to enhance your brand and get it out there?
I mean, I have a podcast. So like what's been taught to me is if you have a podcast and that's your main way to convert people or like them to get to know me as a person, right. Which I'm pretty authentic on the podcast. A lot of people like it, I think, especially in our world, right? Real estate. It's such a bunch of people with suits that are super fake, right? Just salesmen. I mean, it's so enlightening to talk to some real person, and I kind of tell it how it is, and I do that on purpose. Yeah. I might be sometimes a little more edgy than I would like to be because I'm trying to filter for the right person.
Yeah.
I mean, I have like a boutique syndication company where people come in as passive investors for life for the most part, and I have to deal with some of these guys if they're ridiculous. So if you're one of these ridiculous guys, some of my antics might put you off from the beginning, right? I want to work with good people who are hard workers, high performers at their job, and they're just real bros or cool gals, right?
Yeah.
That understand when, you know, not everything's going to go perfect in life or deals, but, you know, damn it, I trust Lane and he's investing his money alongside with him and ride or die. Well, maybe not that type of, you know, going about it, but, you know, I trust him. Right. And, you know, I know he has skin in the game and is trying his best. Yeah. Right. I mean, that's what I would want.
Yeah. It's kind of an authenticity screen you've put up here. You come on strong, you're opinionated. You don't care. And when I say you don't care, I know you care. You know what I mean? You're just saying you're giving off this. I mean, I'm getting this already. You're just like, this is who I am. Want to work with me? Great. If you don't, it's okay. I get it. But that's like a screen. You're screening out people who might be overly cautious. It seems to me like it's interesting that I don't think it's calculated on your part, but in a way it does have some calculation, doesn't it?
Yeah, I've tried different things. I mean, I have like onboarding calls with all my clients and I've tried to be extremely like on purpose, kind of an a-hole in the beginning, right? And that doesn't work out. Like, I think you have to be cool, right? You have to get past the first 10 seconds. First impressions are very important in this world. Yeah. But as quickly can you open up, peel back the layers of the onion, get to know the other person, you know, connect on a personal level, understand where each other are coming from. I think that's when you really kind of start to build that relationship. And the relationship is the most important thing.
Yeah.
Some people, it's just not a good fit, right? The whole 80-20 thing. I like to filter people from the get-go.
Yeah.
And therefore I've only had issue with maybe like 0.5% of my clients. Once we've gotten kind of hitched in a way, which I think is pretty damn good.
Yeah, it is.
Granted, most of the deals go pretty well. So, I mean, that's knock on wood. I mean, you don't really find out people's true colors until you get on rocky times, right?
Well, you find out the true colors when there's money involved, first of all, but that is the world of business. But yeah, then if some stuff goes south, yeah, you do see their true colors pretty quickly. And I've been there myself. Yeah, dozen years in business, I've certainly done that. And, you know, it's interesting about that authenticity screen. I was talking to my spouse recently about a few proposals that I did as a PR agency. Okay. And they didn't go through, and I thought it'd be great. And I thought, gosh, what's wrong with me? And then it occurred to me, there may not be anything wrong with you, Alex. It just may be that they just didn't feel it, or you came on too strong or whatever. And the more I look at it, I kind of start to think of it more like you do. And I don't mean this as a rationalization, like anybody who doesn't work with me, you know, doesn't appreciate how great I am. I don't mean that, but it may mean though that they could sense right off that we were not going to be a fit personality wise. And that's okay too.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it might just be positioning too. I mean, whenever I get on a call with somebody, they've already listened to like dozens of podcasts at the point. I have positioning. Like, for example, I work with marketers all the time. I hire them as contractors. I mean, you and I have a fun rapport. I trust you, right? But like, unless somebody has referred you and vouched for you that I trust as a third party that's outside of the relationship, I'm not going to work with you, period. So that's how I just do things. So it's just nothing personal, but like, unless you come pre-vetted,
right.
You know, it's just not going to work for me. And I think that's how it works for a lot of the people that I, you know, already book a call with me as an onboarding call. They like half of the people come through referrals these days, right? They may not be like that, gone through every single blog, article, podcast, video. I mean, especially the referrals, they don't do any of that work, right? They just go off of their smarter friend. Said, hey, I've been working with this guy the last couple of years.
Right. Yeah. Is there one thing that surprised you about this journey you've been on so far, that good or bad?
I mean, it is surprising that you can definitely engineer celebrity for sure. I mean, I started my podcast in 2016, but it started from an authentic place. Like, I was just teaching people how to buy rental properties because, like, I thought I would forget about it. And all my friends were asking me how to do it. And I got tired of freaking repeating myself again and again. So I think people understood where, like, hey, here's this dude that wants to kind of showcase and how he was doing things, the good and the bad. But then I started to get involved in, like, larger syndications. And, you know, that was, we created the opportunity for just people to passively invest alongside me. Right, which opened up this new arena. And because I already had laid the foundation for the trust and the podcast and kind of the follow my journey, it was a natural transition. And then I figured out what the hell I had created with the whole YouTube and podcast channels. But yeah, I mean, it came around naturally, right? Because now you see, I mean, podcasts are great. That's why you do podcasts. It's a great way to get to your audience to build a relationship with them. Yeah. But so many people start them for like the wrong reasons to get clients. And it just completely shows, like, you know, it's kind of like a desperate guy, right? Like, people know it from like a mile away, you know, you can smell that stuff even through a podcast.
Oh man, I'm sorry to laugh, but it's true because if you're starting a podcast expressly to make money, well, all right, here, I'll be lame for a minute. You're an idiot, because most people are not going to directly make money through a podcast. Okay. That's the first thing. But the other thing is like, I think I did it just to burnish my credentials. I've been doing PR work for 27 years. I mean, I've got things to offer. And you know, what's interesting for me, Lane, is that when I started doing this, I wasn't going to interview people. I just started getting people who listen and say, can we get on your show? Can we talk? And now 90% of the show is me interviewing folks like you who are brilliant, know what they're doing, have something to say. And I've learned so much from it. For me, it's really a great investment in my time for that reason. But yeah, have I made any money off of it? Not a whole lot directly, but I think it has not hurt at all for me to say to people, you know, as a PR guy, I understand this media. I've used it since I did my first podcast in 2006. And this show has been around for 2 years. My other show I'm doing right now since 2016. So I get it. So I appreciate that. And I think you're right about that. And people can smell that stink of desperation on you, whether you're in the room hustling for a sale or you're on a podcast. Well, as we get to close here though, Lane, so if listeners have been listening to you and probably finding you very refreshing because you're straight up, and they're very interested in looking into this whole thing about passive income and what you're doing, where should they go?
Depends where they're at. If they are lower net worth, they can download my free remote rental e-course. They text the word remote to 314-665-1767. If they're already a credit investor, they can check out the podcast and then book an onboarding call, get to know me. thing, check out the podcast, Simple Passive Cash Flow, Passive Real Estate Investing, I think is what it's called. And then simplepassivecashflow.com, a lot of free guides in there, things for kind of for free on there.
Yeah, there's some fantastic stuff on there. I was looking at it. There's lots of wonderful videos. There's lots of multimedia. There's a lot of great stuff on here. And what I like about it too, is that it's not a lot of high pressure. And I think there's a reason why. It's because, like Lane said earlier, if you're a fit, it'll work. If you're not, nice to know you, move on.
Yeah. I did an ad recently, and then, like, you know, Facebook is so hilarious, right? Oof. You get all kinds of people on that thing in the comments section. Oof. Someone said, like, we're giving away like the free infinite banking e-course, which we give away for free. You know, shit, you know, that's what we do. And someone's like, what's in it for free? Nothing's for free. Education should always be, like, dude, chill out, man. Like, you've probably gone down so many long sale pages. Ugh. You're actually one of those people who actually reads everything and then put your money in for $47 and get upsold. Like, poor man. Like, you've just been, like, tormented with this stuff. And that's why you're so angry to write a kind of comment like that. I was like, dude, just chill out, man. Like, we're just gonna give you this stuff. Like, you're good, you know. It's kind of like a, you know, I don't know, this right thing to say. It's like one of those dogs that have been in like the puppy mill, and like just so freaked out about grass, you know. Like,
I'm sorry, Lane. Poor guy. Lane, you're cracking me up. I mean, it's so refreshing. I really do appreciate this about you, Lane Kawaoka. Thank you so much for joining us here in the virtual lounge. We're going to put a link in the show notes to all your stuff. And I'll give you the last word, because I couldn't possibly top you. So what's the last word as we say goodbye?
Yeah, trust no one. All the financial stuff you're taught, you know, only take financial advice from people who are financially free. You know, we don't do retirement accounts. We don't invest in mainstream or retail products. We invest in something that we can control, or, you know, we cut out all the middlemen. And we don't pay much taxes. If you want to see my taxes, go to simplepassivecashflow.com/tax. And that's what it's all about. It's not really about investing your money. It's about keeping most of it.
All right, Lane. It's been such a delight speaking with you. Folks, be sure to visit prafterhours.com, and you can find all the links. And you can see if this is for you. Take care.